In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Amen. My Lord and my God, I firmly believe that you are here, that you see me, that you hear me. I adore you with profound reverence. I ask you for pardon of my sins and grace to make this time of prayer fruitful. My Mother Immaculate, St. Joseph, my Father and Lord, my guardian angel, intercede for me. Well, we come here once again, or we tune in from wherever we are once again, in order to spend this time in prayer, and implicit in this is a desire or a recognition, I suppose, of the need that we have to do better, to improve our relationship with you, Jesus, and to be better persons, better human beings. We could say a healthy need. It's a sign of good health spiritually and psychologically. In fact, there was a well-known psychiatrist who said that mental health is based on a certain degree of tension, the tension between what one has already achieved and what one still ought to accomplish, or the gap between what one is and what one should become. So it's a good tension to have, to realize, you know, the stage that I'm at, the position I'm in, and where I ought to be aiming for. And to keep that tension is a sign of psychological health, and as I say, we could say it's a sign of spiritual health as well, that we know, Lord, that we need to be better, but at the same time we're conscious that it's not a question of taking some huge leap forward. You know, I mean, the spiritual life is a gentle growth, and I suppose, you know, if we think of it as going up a mountain or a hill, then, I mean, I suppose if you climb a mountain, it's possible to look for the steepest, you know, rock face and climb up by your fingertips at 90 degrees to the ground, and the constant peril of falling and collapsing and things. Or you could look for a path which is more circuitous, but which is safer and more assured, and also could be more pleasant, because you go up the path and then you stop and look and admire the view, and you make your way up the path gradually. And that's really what our formation consists of, this gradual growth in our relationship with Jesus Christ. So it's responding to that healthy tension in realizing, Lord, that you know, I'm in a certain situation, a certain position in terms of my relationship with you, and I need to advance in that relationship, but calmly. And in fact, the different aspects of my life, which are all an aspect of my relationship with you, really, but I mean, obviously a big chunk of my life is my work, the work I have to do. Maybe this lockdown has altered the nature of my work, or my working day, or my working practice. Some people, for some, you know, you hear that they've got nothing to do and they get bored, and others feel overwhelmed. And again, it's a question of seeking that healthy tension, isn't it? What I am doing, what I could be doing, what I should be doing, but without getting overwhelmed by it. And in this, to try to imitate you, Jesus, that you had your work to do, and you worked well, you worked conscientiously, but you know it didn't dominate your whole life. I mean, at some point you had to leave your work. And so while you were working for many years, you were working and you worked well, and you made the chairs and tables, and you would have made them very well. But at some point, it was time for you to move on, and the value of what you did remains an eternal value. I mean, what you did it for your father, you did it as preparation for the redemption. And we have that idea as well, that the work that we do day to day, it's, you know, we do it the best we can. It may not, you know, last forever. Whatever we're doing, whatever we're producing, may not last forever. But today, I try and do my work the best I can, because that is an offering to you today. And the work, it comes and goes, but the value of it will remain forever if I try to offer it to you. So each day, I suppose we could say, we aim to have that tension, because you know we know that we're weak, and we lose our focus quite often, or we maybe give in to laziness or procrastination or something, disorder. But this healthy tension means that we come back to our work. We say, sorry, Lord, I got distracted. I was doing things I shouldn't be doing when I'm working, so help me to concentrate, focus on what I should be doing, keeping that tension there and acting on it. In general, we could say that the whole of this applies to the whole concept of our formation, of developing as a person. There's a scene in the Gospel, well, it's a parable that Jesus tells in the Gospel, which you'll remember, about the Pharisee and the publican, these two men who go into the temple to pray. And the Pharisee, he goes along and he presents a list of all the things that he's doing, you know, that he's praying, that he fasts, that he gives his money away and pays tithes on all that he has, you know, 10% of all his income and everything he pays. And so he thinks he's really, you know, achieved the pinnacle of the moral life, you know, and goodness, and there's nothing more for him to do, kind of thing. And whereas the publican, the tax collector, he just stands there and he says, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. And Jesus says that it's the tax collector who wins favour in God's sight. And why is that? Well, the tax collector realises that he has to be better, that, you know, he has failed, he sees himself as a sinner, but he has that desire to do better, to be contrite, to take steps to remedy his faults based on the mercy of God and the patience of God. Whereas the Pharisee is thinking, well, I don't need to do anything else. And so he doesn't need, what we would say, he doesn't need formation. He doesn't think he needs formation. He thinks he's sufficiently formed. But, you know, it's a pity, really, isn't it? Because each one of us has to, I mean, God has, you might say, a finished product in his mind, you know, what he sees for each one of us. And that finished product really is sanctity. At the end of our time on this earth, if we've been responding to grace, we will be approaching that model that he has for us, that goal that he has for us. But if we say, well, I don't need any more formation. Well, we just restrict, we stunt our growth. I mean, you imagine a flower, you know, a flower, it grows gradually, and you don't wrench the flower open, and, you know, just let the petals open in time. Water it each day, or whenever it needs watering, look after it, and with time it develops into what it should be. And this is the plan that God has for each one of us, that gradually we grow, the petals open, the virtues grow, and it grows on the basis of this constancy in formation, in receiving formation. What do we mean by formation? Well, the whole set of things, really. It's the formation that we get, the guidance, the help we get from our direct contact with Jesus in prayer. Also these moments of, you know, the meditations, the talks, the classes that we might attend on the faith. Maybe we have a regular input of spiritual reading so that we learn more about faith, about the life of Christ, about some aspect of our faith. We talk to someone who you know, is there to guide us, to accompany us. We have spiritual guidance, spiritual direction. And the important thing is to keep it up on a regular basis, just as you regularly water the flower. I mean, if you don't water the flower for 6 months and then empty a bucket of water over it, then it's not going to do it any good. It's just going to kill it, either through starvation or drowning. You know? And so, you know, we have our regular means of formation, but, you know, not kind of huge quantities, but we don't go long periods without receiving formation either. So just that gentle input to encourage the gentle growth, so that, you know, we might say in the week ahead, what aspect could I work on? Or really we should say, Lord, what aspect could we work on? What do I need to do to be a little bit better? What can I do with your help? And maybe I make a resolution. I mean, one resolution that applies often to many people is that of punctuality in getting up in the morning, or in starting our work when we should, or finishing our work when we should. You know, which we realize is difficult to do day after day, but. And if we have a point of struggle like that, and we work at it one day after another, and we succeed one day, and we fail another day, and we succeed the next day, we'll have our ups and downs, but gradually the success rate grows. If we're working on that, if we are trying to respond to what we've seen as the way forward for us, then, in fact, that has a benefit for the whole of our interior life. See, when we look at the structure of the interior life, I mean, there's so many different aspects of the virtues, faith, hope, charity, justice, fortitude, temperance, and all those, and then the human virtues of hard work and sincerity and kindness and generosity and humility and all those things. We can say, well, I get overwhelmed, just the list of it overwhelms me. But the point is that if I'm struggling, if I'm fighting in one area, then the growth applies to all of those areas in the interior life, because the spiritual organism is one. So that if I am really trying to overcome some defect, which I think is a bit of an obstacle between us, Jesus, if together we can work at eliminating it, then the whole of my spiritual life goes forward. So this is what we aim at really in receiving formation, to find out where I am, where I should be, what I am, what I should be. There are many ways, I suppose, that we can go wrong, but there's one way to go right, which is to turn to Jesus Christ and to imitate the virtues of Jesus Christ. G.K. Chesterton, a famous English writer, he said, there are an infinite number of ways to fall, but only one way to stand. One way to stand. There's only one way to progress, and that is by turning to our Lord. And this is what we're doing now in this time of prayer. We come to see the centrality of prayer in all of our progress, really, in all of our development. The important thing is to make you, Jesus, the center, and to listen to your words when you say, "Learn from me. Learn from me, for I am meek and humble in heart." And that could be a starting point as well, couldn't it? To say, well, meekness and humility. And it's interesting that Jesus describes himself in those terms, because it makes us realize that perhaps what we think of as meekness and humility aren't always true meekness and true humility. So we do see Jesus passing unnoticed. We do see him, you know, not making a fuss of many things when he's suffering and so on. But we also see him in the temple being very powerful and taking up that whip and turning over the tables of the money changers and casting out the animals in the temple, which required incredible strength and the channeling of this kind of deep, holy anger for the things of his father. So meekness isn't always just kind of shrinking away and avoiding our duties or avoiding complications or anything. Learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart. And perhaps what we come to see is that meekness means having the right reaction in each circumstance. So we look and we see when Jesus is confronted with suffering and so on, and his heart is moved to compassion. He sees the poor widow who's lost her son, and his heart is moved. And so he does a miracle, and he's moved also that other widow who puts two tiny coins in the treasury. You know, it has a deep impact on Jesus. He's so pleased with that. And yet, as I say, he's when he needs to be strong and firm and take action, he does so. And this is a sign of strength of character, isn't it? This is what we want to improve in, so that we can have the right reaction at the right time, so that we can be strong when we need to be, we can be firm when it's a question of standing up for maybe the rights of others who are being treated unjustly, the rights of you, Lord, the rights of God. You see, we might find that perhaps we practice our faith, but when it comes to defending our faith, then we can be a bit cowardly sometimes, can't we? And so maybe I could say, well, that's an area, Lord, where I see where I am and where I ought to be, and there's a gap there. You know, I ought to be stronger when it comes to standing up for the things of my faith. But it might be that I don't stand up for the things of my faith because I lack formation in terms of doctrinal knowledge. I might think, well, I don't know the answers. You know, issues arise and people discuss things and I'm kind of there thinking, well, you know, it doesn't sound right to me, but I don't know what is right. Well, what do we do then? Well, suppose we try and find out the answers, don't we? I mean, our apostolate is the apostolate of friendship. So if something arises in the course of a conversation with a friend and you don't know the answer to, I mean, somebody might say, you know, why does the church hate gay people? And you think, well, and you're not quite sure what to say. You say, well, you know, let me think about it. And, you know, let's speak about it tomorrow, because I'll go and find out what the truth of the situation is, you know, and what, you know, and find out actually the church loves every single person. And so, you know, but we need to find out the doctrine, and by being in situations where questions arise that we're not able to answer, then it puts us in a position to learn, doesn't it? So that you know, we will be able to give an account of our faith by encountering these difficult questions, difficult issues that arise. So, as I say, it's always a question, always the answer is to turn to you, Jesus, and one very fruitful way of turning to you and looking at you is by looking at the what are called the Beatitudes. So these virtues that you set out in the Sermon on the Mount. You say, blessed are the poor in spirit, for example. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So I look at where I am in terms of attachment to material things, in terms of covetousness, perhaps in terms of hoarding things or wasting things. I look at where I am and I look at where I ought to be. And I realize, well, I need a bit of formation there, don't I? I need to experience a bit of that tension between what I have, my desire to maybe have more and more things, or the latest thing, or to hold on to things that I don't use, but I don't want to get rid of them. You know, and the tension between that and the model that you give us, Lord, of just being free to move around. You're not held back by material attachments, because you've got very little in terms of things. You know? Sometimes you don't have anywhere to sleep overnight. Sometimes you go without food. You know, here am I kind of clinging to my material comforts. So there's that tension between having things and not becoming a slave to them. I mean, I need to have things. Obviously, if you're in the middle of the world and you need to have things, I mean, you need to have material possessions, otherwise you can't operate in, you know, as a normal person in society. And yet, there's always that kind of danger that we become subject to the things. The things possess us rather than us possessing the things. Jesus says you cannot serve God and money. There was an American fellow who more or less founded his own religion, and he said that he discovered that this was a spelling mistake in the Bible. He said, you know, it says you cannot serve God and money. He said what it should have said is you cannot sever God and money. So his religion, you know, enabled him to accumulate lots of money. And anyway, someone pointed out, but you know, that is an English spelling mistake, but the Bible wasn't written in English. Mm-hmm. He says, I don't care what language it was written in, the original mistake has been corrected in English. Well, you know, I mean, he was just twisting things to suit himself. We could say there was a refusal to allow himself to be formed. If someone's got this love of money, then formation is going to help them to be a bit more detached, to think about the needs of others, of thinking, if I've got more things than I need, it's so that I learn to give things to people who haven't got what they need. Blessed are those who mourn, Jesus says. Blessed are those who have compassion on others. Now, is this an attribute that I allow to develop within me? That putting myself in the shoes of others. Compassion, the meaning of it literally is suffering with the other person. So it's kind of making the other person's situation, their suffering, my own, and thinking, well, you know, how would I like to be treated if I were in that situation? So, you know, it does require an effort, doesn't it? The effort of making mental space for others and thinking about their situation and their needs, and then putting ourselves in a position where if we're called upon to help, we're ready to respond to that, to do what we can to relieve the suffering of another, whether it's just through letting them know that someone cares about them, that someone remembers them. You know, there's a great danger for many people of loneliness, isn't there? Just thinking, well, nobody really cares about me, but if they find that you care about them, well, you've done a great service and you've brought the compassion of Jesus Christ to them. Blessed are the merciful. Well, we look at your example, Jesus, of mercy, your readiness to forgive, and we think, well, you know, here I need formation, don't I? Here there's a tension between the grudges that I'm clinging to and that open forgiveness that I'm called to show to people. So help me, Lord, to bridge that gap a little bit, to try to get rid of those things that weigh down my heart. And blessed are the pure in heart. Those who are impure, you could say they don't see God because their vision is blurred, and if they keep giving in to sensuality, it leads to earthbound visions, an earthbound way of seeing things. And you know, if we find this is an area where we're constantly failing, well, it gives us, you know, an idea again of the gap to fill. And if that is a situation, well, we know the easy and quick remedy is to turn to Our Lady, in this as in everything, to turn to Our Lady, where we see that we're falling short of the mark. We can say, well, Mary, Jesus has given you to me to be my mother. You take me in your arms, take me by the hand, and help me to walk along that path from where I am to where I know I ought to be. I give you thanks, my God, for the good resolutions, affections, and inspirations you have communicated to me in this meditation. I ask you for help to put them into effect. My Mother Immaculate, St. Joseph, my Father and Lord, my guardian angel, intercede for me.